The next talk is by Chuck C. of the Beverly Hills, California group, and was recorded at the Tudor Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in the city of New York, April the 26, 1953. Chuck that year was the delegate to the General Services Conference held here. Chuck C.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am an alcoholic. Any resemblance that I might have to a human being is directly due to the efficacy of the principles in this book of ours right here. I rather enjoy saying that I am an alcoholic. I don't like to think of it in terms of I used to be an alcoholic or that I am a cured alcoholic or that I've been healed or something like that. I like to say I am an alcoholic because when I say it, I am very forcibly reminded of the terrific failure I made when I was running my own life. I not only failed in the business of drinking, but I failed in the business of living. All departments, the business of living. And when I am reminded of that, what I did with my life, it's not very difficult for me to be humble. And when I think of the terrific change that has come to pass in my life in the last several years, the change that has been wrought in my life, it's not very difficult for me to be grateful. And I think that's a rather good team, humility and gratitude. I heard an old boy in our stag meeting in Beverly Hills not long ago make this little observation. He says, did you ever think of this fact, that it is totally and completely impossible for us to be grateful and unhappy at the same time? Oh, I thought that was terrific. I spent much time thinking about it since I heard it. And I've come to believe that that's correct. It's impossible for us to be grateful and unhappy at the same time. And it gave me a little key to why I have been so slap-happy since I came to this program. And it's because I am so, I think, completely filled with gratitude. You see, I couldn't get sober and stay sober. This program, in my book, is the simplest thing on earth. Simplest thing on earth. In the first place, if I could have gotten sober and stayed sober without it, I wouldn't be a member of this fellowship at all. I wouldn't even be here. So, insofar as I'm concerned, it was a necessity. It became very necessary for me to come to this fellowship. And it was the point of last call for me. I almost didn't get here in time. I almost missed the boat. Because I didn't come until I had just about tried everything that there was to try. I didn't come until after I'd started falling over in the floor and chewing my tongue full of holes and babbling like an idiot. I don't know how long or how often you can do that, but I think I'd about run out, because the last time that I toppled over, I didn't chew my tongue and I didn't babble. I just turned blue. Sometime later, I woke up and the oxygen squad was there from the Beverly Hills Receiving Hospital, and they'd been working me over for a while. And they had a young doctor with him, and he says, listen, young man, he says, we've had a hell of a time with you. To all intents and purposes, you'd left for the land of Nod, said he. Says, we've had a rough time bringing you back, and we don't think that anybody will ever bring you back again. So he advised me against it. He was opposed to that procedure. Now, for the last 10 years of my drinking career, which was 25 years, I recognized that I had a problem. I recognized it as a personal problem, something I had to lick myself. I didn't think total abstinence was the answer at all. I thought that was a weakling's way out. And I didn't like weaklings. I thought you had to lick a problem to get rid of it. So I started working on this thing. And for the next 10 years, I worked on it very diligently. Very hard. And the longer I worked on it, the worse it got. And the worse it got, the more determined I was to beat it. So I wrote it right down to the last ditch. Now all this time, my friends would tell me, Chuck, you can't drink, you gotta quit. And it griped me a great deal. Some of them I recognized as my inferiors, both physically, mentally, and spiritually. They'd say, Chuck, you can't drink, you gotta quit. And I'd say to myself, well, the little shrimp, he can drink. Why can't I? And the answer to me was, I can, and I'll prove it. And I kept right on trying to prove it. A little later on, when I was making a few trips to my doctor, he used to talk with me a great deal about this problem, and he was a great friend of mine. I'd been in clubs with him, known him for a long time, and he used to talk to me a great deal about standing up and being a man. He talked considerably about my backbone. He had some very descriptive adjectives that he used in describing my backbone. He didn't seem to think much of it. He talked about willpower. And, of course, I didn't think there was anything wrong with my backbone. I didn't think there was anything wrong with my willpower. I never had any trouble getting a drink. I could get a drink in Kansas on election day. My preacher used to talk to me a little about this thing, too, and I get the greatest kick out of this anymore. I could have the whips and jingles for fair. I could really be jumping. And he maybe would talk to me a little about this thing. And I could look him right straight in the eye and pity him. I'd say to myself, what the hell does he know about alcohol? He never had a drink in his life. And I'd always end up by saying to myself, and besides, if he had my trouble, he'd be drunk too, you see. Told me why I couldn't drink. Nobody ever did tell me why I couldn't drink like other people. And I think it's a very good thing for those amongst us who are new to know why it is that we can't drink like other people. We can't drink like other people because we're different. It's as simple as that. We're different from other people. If we ever had the ability to drink, if we ever had the ability to react normally to alcohol, someplace along the line we lost it. And having lost it, it's not to be found again. Some authorities tell us that it is as impossible for a man or woman to drink enough liquor to make of themselves an alcoholic as it is for a man or woman to eat enough sugar to make of themselves a diabetic. That we were born with the physical inability to react normally to alcohol. Whether that be true or false, it seems to make absolutely no difference to me. This is an established fact, not only in our society, but in the annals of medical science as well. Once we have lost that ability, if we ever had it, we never regain it so long as we live. We are fighting a losing battle. We are fighting a losing battle. In our opinion, there are only three possibilities for the alcoholic. Either he dies an alcoholic death, which is to be preferred if you're an alcoholic of my kind, or you go insane and stay that way, or you find a way to live that makes the first drink unnecessary. And such is the program that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. Our definition of the disease of alcoholism, which incidentally is said to be the third worst killer in the United States today, topped only by heart and cancer, second only to one of our social diseases as a cause for insanity, probably the best definition we'll ever hear of the disease of alcoholism is contained here in AA. We call it an allergy of the body, coupled with an obsession or obsessions of the mind. Now, it's the allergy of the body about which we've been talking. Once this has become manifest in our bodies, there is no change for it, and all we can do here is to recognize that we have it, that we shall always have it, and turn to the other half, the disease. The obsession of the mind, that causes us to take that first drink. You see, the allergy of the body has no power over us until we feed it a little alcohol. It'll never bother us until we give it a little fuel. But that first slug is the drink we mustn't take. That next one is the one we must not take, because if we do, every cell in our body screams for another. So we recognize that and turn to the other half of the disease. Now, insofar as I'm concerned, I like what this book has to say about. The book tells us that if we be alcoholic, we cannot expect to get sober and stay sober on the basis of self-knowledge alone. Says the book, if we be alcoholic, it seems that in certain circumstances, certain situations, there is only one defense against that first drink, and that is help from a power greater than ourselves. This I believe, as I believe that I'm here with you tonight. That is the reason I think that I can and do so thoroughly subscribe to the ABCs of our program. A, that I am an alcoholic and cannot run my own life. B, that probably no human power could relieve my alcoholism. C, that God could and would, if sought. This is my AA program. Now, I suspect the most significant thing that will ever happen to any of us, the most significant single event that will ever take place in the lives of anyone amongst us, is that moment when we can and do see that we are lifted. When we can and do say to ourselves, I am powerless over alcohol, and my life has become unmatched. You see, as long as we think that we can beat this thing ourselves, just that long is the door closed, and we're in no condition to get help. Just as long as I said I'll beat this thing if it's the last thing I ever do, I kept getting drunk. And it came awful close to being the last thing I ever did. Awful close. But just the minute that the admission of defeat, without reservation, came to me from that minute to this, thank God, I have never found it necessary to take another drink. So, I believe that the greatest thing that ever happens to us is when we surrender, completely surrender. And from that time on, it's pretty easy. Many amongst us get up and say, this is a simple program, but it isn't easy. If it weren't for the serious nature of a problem, I'd have to laugh out loud. I never knew an easy way of life until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. The thing that was tough for me to do was to be an alcoholic. That was rough. That was rough. And I'd like to, in just a couple of minutes, try to tell you the little simple formula that I use. Seems to be the simplest in the world. I woke up one morning after perhaps 3 weeks of continuous drinking the clock around 24 hours a day. I woke up one morning with my skin entirely full of alcohol, as full as it could be, but for some unknown reason, I had a clear mind, clear head. My head was clear as this night. And for the first time in my adult life, I looked at me and saw what was there, and it wasn't anything. I knew that for 25 years, I had gone steadily backwards, and there wasn't any place else to go. I knew that I was licked without knowing why. I knew that I couldn't get out of this thing alone, that I must have help, and I made my decisions as to where I was going to go to get that help. and one of them was Alcoholics Anonymous. Just as soon as I was able, which was several days later, I went out on a Sunday night and walked into my first meeting alone. It was then I heard this preamble and the 12 steps in our chapter 5 read for the first time. I couldn't believe my ears. I couldn't believe that a bunch of drunks had worked out this program. It was so beautiful and so good, and I seemed to know that anyone that lived according to these principles would get sober and stay sober. But it didn't help me very much, because I was scared to death. I was afraid that I had already lost too many of my good marbles. They'd gotten out and rolled away. And that I didn't have enough left to get this thing. But I knew that I needed it and wanted it more than life. So I started attending meetings every night of the week. Every night of the week I was in a meeting. Shaking, sweating, freezing, jumping. Picking up two or three little things and taking them home with me. Thinking about them all the rest of the night because I wasn't sleeping well in those days for some reason. And the next night in another meeting and getting a couple of other things. And after a few weeks, I was going early to help them put the chairs around and waiting to help pick up the ashtrays and the coffee cups because I wanted so much to feel that I was a part of this thing. And when somebody, some stranger, said to me, how you doing? And gave me a little encouragement. I had to cry a little, because here was a stranger interested in my well-being, when those who knew me wouldn't even talk to me. And it did things to me inside. And when I was able to hold a coffee cup after meeting without spilling it all down my front, I'd get a cup of coffee and pick out somebody that seemed to be talking pretty good AA and back up to him. And get up close enough that I could sip a little coffee and eavesdrop on them. And when they'd spot me, I'd take on off and find somebody else and eavesdrop a little more because I wanted this thing so bad. And after 6 months of this, I woke up to the fact that I was sober. Woke up to the fact that I had been sober all the time, past three or four periods when ordinarily I would have been drunk. And I hadn't been drunk at all. It was the happiest awakening in my life. And everything that's happened to me since then has just happened. Just happened, and I have to look back over the years to see why it happened. And all my opinions are in retrospect, every one of them. And this seems to be my formula, simple as it can be. I'd already taken step number one before I came to the fellowship. The morning that I told you about, I had completely admitted to myself that I not only was powerless over alcohol, but that my life had become unmanageable. I would have liked very much to take step number two. I would have liked to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I would have loved to believe that. I would also have liked to take step number three. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, as we understood it. I'd have liked to have done that. But I didn't think I had a chance in the world. I hated my internal workings, and I figured that God did too. And whilst I would have liked to do that thing, I didn't think it was in the cards. I didn't think I could get rid of me that easy to give the mess that was me to anything, let alone to God. However, I had no objection. So I picked up the last half of step 12 and practiced these principles in all of our faith. I rather thought maybe if I did that, maybe if I started doing the things that this book suggests one day at a time, I might get the help that I needed. So with me, it was the surrender, the recognition of the need for help, and then an honest effort to do these simple things one day at a time. That's all there was to it. Perhaps the key word in my program is self-honesty. Seems to me that we must get honest enough to see ourselves as we are, see what's wrong with us, and start trying to do something about it as honestly as we can, to the best of our ability. And it seems that if we do that over any considerable period of time, we'll wake up to the fact that we've already moved out of hell into heaven, that we have already been receiving the help from this power greater than ourselves. And we have to thank God. It's as simple as that to me. And in the moment before closing, I would say this about our new way of life. To me, this is the most fascinating thing that has ever happened to anyone. I had all the problems I believe that a man can have when he comes here. After 20 years, Mrs. C., my good wife, who is with me tonight, had sought counsel to get rid of me. She had given up after these years had passed. Our eldest son was 17, and we had a young one. And they would be very glad when I was out of the place. They wanted me out of the way because I was interfering with their way of life. They couldn't live naturally. My boss was all done with me, and I was all done with myself. No health, no sanity, no money, no nothing. That was the way it was with me. But for some reason or another, the important thing in my mind was sobriety. I didn't come here to find God. I didn't come here to find answers to these other problems. I came here for sobriety. I started doing the things this book suggests for one thing, sobriety. Just sobriety. And by the time I woke up to the fact that I was sober, I'd gotten used to trying to live according to these principles one day at a time. And I found it good. And I've been doing it ever since. Because I find it good. I love this program, and I love its people. Fortunately for me, all these other problems disappear. Mrs. C. and I have found a life together that's terrific. She tells me now, Daddy, if we had to spend those 10 years in hell to find what we have today, I'm glad that it happened. And our sons have found it pretty good, too. We have a very happy relationship together. And my boss sits with me now, and we talk about these things, and the tears run down her cheeks, and we're not ashamed. And he tells me, Chuck, I'd rather the plant would burn down than to lose you. We're just getting started together. It's a wonderful life. It's a fascinating life. We are the luckiest people on earth, I think, because the very serious nature of our disease forces us to fulfill the conditions of God. Forces us to realize that a life lived by self-will can hardly be satisfactory. Forces us to see that of ourselves we are a failure. Living away from, apart from God. We're no good. We're away from home. So we come back home by necessity. And we find the good life. Fortunately for us, the answer to the disease of alcoholism and the answer to the riddle of life itself is one and the same answer. A personally satisfactory, conscious partnership with God as I understand God in the business of living. It's a fascinating thing. Those of you who are new, give yourself a break. Come back to these meetings. Listen with an open mind. See if you think that we have something that you want. And if we have, see if you can give yourselves completely to this simple program. And see for yourself what the miracle of AA is. See for yourself the joys that come with the AA way of life. Thank you.